Our next presenter is Chris Arendt, who will introduce himself.
Hello. Hi. My name is Christopher Arendt, and I would like to share with you how one goes about becoming a concentration camp guard without ever having really made many decisions. I was 17 years old when I joined the United States Army National Guard in Michigan. My family had been displaced, and I was living with friends. And I decided to join the military because I had no other options. My family was poor, I was poor, and I wanted to go to school. I was promised a significant amount of money for this purpose, which I have yet to receive. And I joined the field artillery, Charlie 1st and the 119th Field Artillery, where I served quite happily for, no, that's a lie, I was miserable. I hated it. But I served nonetheless. I was usually at drill, and my uniform was usually, well, it was on. And it didn't really seem. Oh, I joined November 20th of 2001, which was after September 11th, though I lied about it later and said that I joined before September 11th. And we got the orders in October of 2003 that we would be deploying to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Artillerymen would be deploying to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba to be prison guards in a prison camp. In our mobilization process, which lasted the period of 1 month in Fort Dix, New Jersey, we were taught how to put shackles on other people. I remember it feels so ridiculous when you are practicing how to put shackles on another human being. You realize how absurd it is. You're putting them on somebody's hands, and it's just awkward. It's just an awkward thing, and it hurts. It's uncomfortable. It feels dehumanizing. This is just practice. This is just to warm up for the big game. And it just felt so silly, the whole thing. And we left for Guantanamo Bay early in January and got there safely. It was hot. It was uncomfortable. We slept in these awful little houses, but at least we had houses. I mean, the rest of the testimonies you've heard here not had it, some of the luxuries that we were given in Guantanamo. But I served on the blocks for 2 months as a prison guard. My duties were to feed, properly dispense toilet paper, and occupy myself in some way, shape, or form to drive the boredom out. That was the primary difficulty in keeping my humanity in touch, was the boredom all of the time. One of the ways I dealt with this was talking with the detainees, because an unfortunate consequence of having detainees is that they are human beings and also have stories, and I talked with them about those stories, which became an incredibly unpopular event or a series of events, which led to my being taken off the blocks to work in the Detention Operations Center as the escort control for the next 8 months of my tour. During that time, I personally managed as an E4 the movements of every detainee in Camp Delta for 12 to 14 hour shifts, and rotated with a very small other crew, a crew of other E4s, 20, I was 19 at the time. And just papers, numbers, shackles, keys. All of it had to be accounted for, but it wasn't anything more than papers and shackles and numbers and keys. And I'd call two people in, usually over outranking me, and I'd have to tell them to do something that they hated doing, and they hated me for telling them to do it. But that's the organization of the machine. It's just one ridiculous piece of meat and a plinko machine of orders that come down from God knows who, where. It's just it just keeps coming down, and it just keeps going through. There are two specific things I would like to address about the operation of Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. One is the issue of torture. I've heard a lot of speculation as to what torture is considered. First and foremost, I would like to ask of everyone, well, I don't really expect an answer, but I just for your own considerations, whether or not living inside of a cell for 5 years away from your family and your friends without ever being given any answers as to why you're there, asking 19-year-old boys that don't have any idea about the policy of our government and the politics that make these things happen, why they're there, and the answers that we weren't able to give, I consider that torture. But if that weren't enough, if that wasn't enough, there were other methods as well to make certain that we got around to torturing these people. As I said earlier, I dispatched the detainee movements. I would come into the office at 4:30 in the morning, and sometimes there would be a little paper in the wall with a number on it, which represented a detainee, which represented a detainee inside of an interrogation room. An interrogation room which was anywhere from maybe 10, 20 degrees in temperature, with loud music playing, and that detainee had been there for an indeterminate amount of time, and sometimes that detainee would stay there for my entire 12 to 14 hour shift, shackled to the floor by his hands and his feet, with nothing to sit on, with loud music playing in the freezing cold. And I guess that's torture too. It depends on who you ask. I hear that there's an official list of things that are and are not torture. Waterboarding is. This is not. My recent example is not torture. I can't believe that a human being could even write a list like that, but the other issue I would like to address is the common usage of the instantaneous reactionary force, which is a five-man team established on the day. Every day it's a rotating force. Whoever's in the camp at that time, they make the teams in the morning. And if by any chance a detainee is unsatisfied with his stay and becomes rowdy, five grown men who have all been eating well, which is a privilege that these detainees are usually not allowed, are fitted with riot gear and a shield and are lined up outside of a cell while the platoon leader of that particular camp sprays the detainee in the face with OC spray. I don't know who in here has been sprayed with OC spray, but I'm positive that anybody that has would never want it to happen again. I had it happen to me, and I certainly feel as that's probably one of the worst moments in my life. It was an incredibly, intensely painful experience, and I would never, ever want anyone to have this happen again. Have this happen to them, I'm sorry. And after spraying the detainee with this, which put me on my knees for probably 2 to 3 hours afterwards and in a great deal of pain for the next 3 days because it's oil-based and it's incredibly painful, these five men would rush in and take whatever opportunities they could to, usually, though it's not, I have to state, because they did make a book about it. It's called the SOP. And it does not state that you should beat the S-word out of detainees, but I guess that some people just decided that that's what they were going to do anyway. These are all on tape, by the way. The government makes sure that each one of these operations is taped. I taped several of them, and I would certainly be so happy to be able to show you those clips, but I doubt that those will be released anytime soon. After the detainee is taken forcibly from his cell, this is probably the first time that he's left his cell in 5, 6, 7 days, I have to stop now. Thank you for listening to me.
And that's the voice of Christopher Arendt talking about his experiences as a guard at Guantanamo. We have a panel of people, all of whom so far have worked in prisons operated by the U.S. government abroad.